Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, September 7th, 2014. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean. You can email the podcast at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can rate it on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the show, you can do that. You can follow the show on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can like it on Facebook. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lamberth, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. So there's a lot of ways you can get down with this podcast. It's early on Sunday. I'm trying to get this out on early so you can get to your football and so I can watch it and have a good time for about 45 minutes and then fall asleep on it. I don't know what it is with me, but I was having this conversation. I had two separate conversations with my father and a coworker. And the first was with my dad, and I don't know if it was because it was preseason that I was sort of like, is football kind of boring now? Is it kind of boring? Or is it just because the starters aren't playing? They play for like one or two plays. I went to a football game, a preseason game, and it was pretty fun. The whole, I talked to you guys about it. But it's just like, okay, after a certain point, it's like, they stop a lot. And then when you're watching it on TV, though, they show so many commercials. And it's, you know, am I not cool because I'm finding it kind of boring? I don't know. I don't know, guys. And then I was talking to a coworker a couple days ago, and we were just talking about, yeah, football's starting. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know what, Chris? It's kind of getting a little boring. And I was like, you know, I had that conversation with my dad, and he said, your dad is right. But I think what it is, when they show these games, like early in the afternoon, these games are fun. And I have college football on when I'm at home. I switched from different channels and everything. And it's a good time. It's fun. And you get to see all the different teams. I didn't really get to watch too much yesterday because I was out running errands. But I did when I got home. I got home around the time the Notre Dame-Michigan game started. And right now, as I'm talking to you guys, the highlights from Michigan and Notre Dame is on. And just while I was watching this, just the way that Everett Golson, quarterback for the Fighting Irish, he just looked so great, and I'm happy for this kid because he had gotten into some trouble last year academically, and he was suspended, and he came back, and he just looked good. He looked better than he did last year, the way he was throwing the ball. It kind of looked like Russell Wilson a little bit, just in the way that he was just running out of the pocket. Looked like he was just doing like a lot of bootlegs, getting the ball off and just throwing these beautiful passes and just throwing it all over the field with this just such great precision. And it looked great. I remember when he was a freshman, they kept swapping him in and out. And maybe Michael Felder can elaborate on this when he hears it. But he just didn't look like he had as much confidence. I think because they were switching quarterbacks, and that's never really that good when you're doing that. But I watched a little bit of that game, and then it kind of got out of hand, and I was switching. Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech, and I'm telling you guys, man, what's fun about this college football season? Not only they're doing it since they're doing the playoff thing, that's going to be interesting to watch, but there's a lot of parity now. Like these young guys, these guys are trying to play football, and they're not trying to be apprentices anymore. They're trying to play as soon as they can. Now, of course, there's some kids that redshirt, I'm sure, but I mean, a lot of these kids are going to these schools that are unranked, and they're giving these highly ranked teams a run for their money. So that's fun to watch. And then the NFL started Thursday. That was good. That was fun. But I fell asleep on it, not because it was boring, because it was on a Thursday night at 8:30, and I have a job that I have to get up for. I don't know that they well now. Now that Seattle game, that was West Coast time, so that game probably happened at what 5:30 in the evening, late afternoon. But they still do those games really late. And if you have a job or just somewhere to be the next morning, it's hard to really enjoy a game and watch the whole thing in its entirety. That's what happens to me a lot with sports. Like I'll get excited for a lot of these games and I'm like, yeah, football, sport, whatever it is. And I'm going to watch it. And then I just fall out. I fall asleep. I miss phone calls. Friends think I don't care about them. Friends think, like, one of my good buddies will call me because he lives on the West Coast. The homie, Jamar Johnson, man, like, he's back in San Francisco now, and, like, he'll call and I'll just be asleep. And he probably thinks I'm an asshole. But that happened, like, he called me this week and I was asleep, and then he called me Saturday night and I was asleep. I don't know, but yeah, maybe it's just me, but I am definitely excited about the NFL season. And I'm sitting in a chair and it's making like it needs to be greased down. Like, as I move, it's making noises. But this is real life. This is real. I'm in my apartment. Bergen County is happening all around us. Like, the windows are open. It's not super hot outside. So, so I got the windows open. And you can probably hear ambient noises. What I am nervous about, I'm nervous about the Redskins. I'm nervous about the Redskins playing the Houston Texans. I'm afraid for RG3. I just, with JJ Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, oh my God. Like, I hope they got somebody blocking for him. They're talking about RG3, whether he's gonna, what they're trying to figure out what he's gonna be now after he had a bad year and he was still injured. I'm nervous about that front line coming for him. Because I know they're coming for him. I just don't get. I don't get why there's so much criticism around RG3. Like, the fact he's a good quarterback and he had a great rookie season and you know, up and down last year, and they didn't do well. But it just seems like, why are they so obsessed with this kid doing all these commercials? It just doesn't. It seems like if you're, I've probably said this before, but if you're a quarterback, you're the face of the franchise. You're going to be on commercials. You're going to be doing your Subway commercials, your Adidas commercials. What, like, you see Peyton Manning, Peyton Manning is rapping on DirecTV commercials. Peyton Manning will sell anything to anybody. He will do it. Nobody says anything about him. Nobody really said anything about Tom Brady's Uggs commercial. And I guess because you have a Mos Def song in the background. Shout out to Mos Def, because he has this. He was in an Apple commercial. Make that Apple money, Mos Def. All right. So I'm excited about football, and I will have it on all day, just like everybody else. So I'm excited. It's going to be a good year. I don't have any predictions. I'll just say that, Seattle looked like they were not fucking around. Didn't look like they were complacent against a projectedly good Green Bay Packer team, if you led by Aaron Rodgers, and you, if Aaron Rodgers is supposed to be is considered to be the best quarterback in the game, and they beat him 36-16. So it looks like they're not messing around, and Russell Wilson continues to impress almost under the radar, because it's still like they're still not giving this kid props for balling the way he is, and even if you want to say, I guess, like managing a team is sort of like it has a negative connotation, I think, when you say a guy's a manager of the game. I mean, he manages the game, but he looked like he was throwing good passes and running outside of the pocket, doing what he needed to do, making the right decisions, and the guy's a leader, and he is. So screw you guys if you don't think he's not a leader. All right, so this is episode 83 of the Mundane Festival, and I'm going to call this episode Andre Reed, former wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills and a sundry and two other teams, the Broncos and the Redskins. Can you really count that? But he's a Buffalo Bill. So let's read some of his awards and achievements. Andre Reed was born on January 29th in 1964 in Allentown, Pennsylvania, also hometown of the great Jim Tews, who we had on last week. Standing at 6'2", weighing in at 190 pounds, he went to Kutztown College. Let's look up Kutztown College, because I've never heard of that. Kutztown University of Pennsylvania. Huh. Or KU. An American public university located in rural Kutztown, Berks County, Pennsylvania. How about that? You learn something new every day. I did not know that. Okay, so back to this. All right. Drafted in the fourth round, pick number 86 in 1985, played with the Bills in 1985, last played for the Washington Redskins in 2000, played with the Bills from 1985 to 1999, and was with the Broncos and the Redskins. He has an asterisk by the Redskins in 2000, offseason and or practice squad member only, so he didn't really play with them. So career highlights and awards: 7-time Pro Bowl selection, 2-time AP second team All-Pro 1989 and 1990, 3-time NEA second team All-Pro, 4-time AFC champion, Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame, Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, recent inductee in this year in 2014, career NFL statistics: 951 receptions, 13,198 receiving yards, and 87 touchdowns. So there you go. Andre Reed, Tecmo Bowl legend. Ooh, yeah. One of the best wide receivers to ever play the game, man. And shout out to Jim Kelly, who I believe is in remission for having cancer. Like, he was really in bad shape, and now he's back, he's recovering, so that's always good to hear. And so there we go. This is episode 83, episode Andre Reed. All right, so some somber, sad news this week. For the Chicago theater community, lost quite a few people within the last week/last month. Molly Glenn, Bernie Vaughn, Trinity Murdoch, and Satie Word, four very talented actors in the Chicago community, who died. Now there's an article in the Chicago Sun-Times, I believe it's their entertainment blog, I posted it on Facebook and Twitter. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can get the info. Friday, this past week, two actors, Molly Glenn and Bernie Vaughn, died in separate accidents, and they, you know, it's really sad. It's unexpected. These were two Chicago actors that were in the prime of their career, and they were very, very talented staples in the community, and they just passed away suddenly in two separate accidents, and it's just really tragic. I mean, and also there's an actor named by the name of Trinity P. Murdoch who passed away, who was also a staple in the theater community. He worked with the Black Ensemble Theater and Impact Theater. I didn't know any of these, the three of these people that I just mentioned, but I did know Sati Word. Sati Word was a very talented actor that I had the pleasure of working with a couple times and just being an acquaintance. I'm not going to say that I was BFFs with the guy, but it has an effect on me because this guy was only 30. He was my age. It was at least in his early 30s. That struck me, and I know the theater community is at a loss for these people, but I just want to talk a little bit about Sati. He was a super talented guy. I moved to Chicago in 2002, and I was for theater school, and I met him. I want to say I met him in 2003 when I was an understudy on this play called King of Coons, which was loosely based on the life of Step and Fetch It. And I was an understudy for the lead actor, Anthony Irons, and also some of the other, just the male roles. And Sati was like my age, and he was already doing it. He didn't need theater school. He was a beast, and he was killing it. And just a very spirited, talented actor. And he was working on, let me see, I'm gonna use my chair. It's gonna make you're hearing me make squeaky noises, but I'm gonna look up my Twitter because I posted one of the projects that he was working on, like most recently, that he was just doing a lot in the city. I'm just gonna go to my timeline here. Just a super talented guy, man. And I want to get to this before I tell you any more. We're going to, let's see. Oh boy. Where the hell is this? See, when I look on the timeline for my phone, I can't find what I'm looking for. I'm trying to be serious, but it's like, shit. Kind of what, come on, technology. He was working on this one man show called, let me just get it right, because I did post it on my Twitter. Hold on a second, guys. Okay, he was working on this project called Baseball Music, The Sweetest Sound. And it's on YouTube, and it's a clip. It's like a couple scenes from it, and it's about 18 minutes. And you could just see how talented this guy was. It was just him on stage, and he was just him performing. And he's a really talented guy. And I remember we were doing this play called Trouble the Water with Impact Theater Company. And it was a play that was basically about Hurricane Katrina, about the people affected by it. And it was a good play, but it was a serious play. It was this intense play. And there was singing and stuff in it, but it came from us. There was no canned music. There were no instruments, and it sort of just came from the souls of the actors. And so we were just hanging out before the show, and we would goof, we'd be goofing around, and we were just goofing around, like making songs or just telling jokes or something, just goofing off. And he turned to me one time and he said, "Chris, man, you need to do stand up, man." And he was like, "You're really funny." He's like, "You're funny. You need to go and do stand up. I'm gonna take you down to Jokes and Notes. You're gonna be really funny." And I was like, "Oh, nah, man." And this was the time like where I was afraid of stand up. Like, I'd always wanted to do it, but that was just something that was in the corner of my memory. So that was 2 years before I actually started. And he was one of the guys that he was one of the few people that told me that I should start doing it. And coming from a guy like that whose talent I respected, that meant something. And it always, you kind of feel weird when you talk about stuff when you talk about somebody, how they had an effect on you. But I think that's how that person lives on. But it's like, it's this, the Facebook thing, you know, we had Joan Rivers pass away, and RIP to a legend. She was one of the greats, and, she shaped stand up in more ways than people probably even realize. The way comedians critique celebrity and society, she's one of the greats. She wasn't just a talking head making fun of people's dresses at award show. She was way more than that. She'll be missed. Not really a tragedy, not a tragedy like the way that these people passed away, like Molly Glenn and Bernie Von. Anyway, I'm going off track. But when someone dies and you had any type of relationship, you start to think about how that person had an effect on your life and what that person meant to you. And I spent a lot of the week thinking about that and just reflecting on this guy who, in all honesty, maybe there's a little bit of jealousy, because this guy was not in school. He was killing it. He was working on all the good stages. And then to get to work with this guy, when you actually get to meet the person, you see what kind of soul they have, like what kind of like good person they are with whatever demons they were going through, whatever demons they had. This guy was a talented person. And when people, and I'll get to some of this a little later too, just in what else I want to talk about today. But when people like that, people that have these, that have this, like intense, very, they have these great qualities about themselves and these, immense talents, and they see something in you that's similar to them. And it's kind of like, it's a humbling thing. And so for him to come out and say something like that to me was just like, you know, as I reflect on where I am now in my life, it was pretty powerful. But what, 7 years ago when he said it, I was like, "Oh, whatever." You know, but then when you have a little more age on you, you can kind of reflect a little bit more. But this guy was a talented guy, and I did not know the other three performers that passed away, but it affects the community, and the Chicago theater community was a community that inspired me, is a community that made me, had a part in making me the person that you're listening to today, the type of performer that you're listening to today. Some really talented people came out of the Chicago theater community. There's some still really talented people that are there that you never heard of that are insanely gifted and talented. They're doing their thing, but it's just not on a huge scale where they're in, like, maybe in movies and stuff like that. But just such a wealth of talent, and it taught me work ethic. It's great to be a performer and to get all the accolades, but it's just, that's a community where you won't you won't always necessarily get paid doing what you love to do, or you may get paid very little, but you will learn your craft in Chicago. If you train in Chicago to be a performer, actor, comedian, that's the city of big shoulders. That's where people, they work. Like, these are people that work as waiters or office in offices, wherever they work, and then they go do theater. Then they go to rehearsal from 6 to 10 at night, and they go back to work, and then they do that process over and over and over again, and then they give you these amazing shows 5 or 6 times a week. And that's not even talking about, like, your big theaters in that city. That's not even your Goodman Theater, your Steppenwolf, your Court, your Chicago Shakespeare Theater. I'm talking about, and those theaters are amazing, they're great, but I'm talking about, like, your storefront theaters, your other independent theater companies that are off the loop. Like, there are people that are fucking working, and that's somebody like a Danielle O'Farrell, who was on this podcast, Scott Stangland, who is I'm going to get on this podcast, who is in Once the Musical. That's Courtney Reed, who is in Aladdin, who's playing Princess Jasmine on Broadway. Tons of other people that are from the Chicago theater community that I don't know. There's a lot of people affected by the loss of these people, and it's Chicago. Even though we lost these very talented people, it's just there's a good reason for me to talk about it. It's a good reason for me to talk about, you know, what that city made, what that city continues to create, what that city made me as an artist. I mean, I'm going to be a little self-involved and say that was a community that made me who I am. And I gotta big myself up a little bit. You gotta, you know, like, it's, man, like, it just caught some people dying like that just kind of cause you to reflect on your life. I was talking to a good friend from Chicago. We were texting, we were talking about, you know, everything going on, like the people, like losing these people. And we were texting at like 7 in the morning, and I'm like, let me call this guy, talk to him for like 2 hours. You know, sometimes it's good to pick up the phone and actually dial the numbers, and you're not really dialing the numbers if that person's already in your phone. You just like press the button and their name comes up, and you don't really have to touch the keys. You're just dialing this person, and you can talk to him, actually have a conversation with this guy. It's like we were talking about, was talking to Jim Tews about last week. Just the art of conversation is something that's becoming a lost art. And it takes something like that sometimes to make you reflect and to be thankful for the people. So I always say, I've said this on the show before, give people their flowers while they can still see them and smell them. And I did get to tell Sati that I was like, hey, man, I started doing stand up and I remember him. He was like, that's good, man. He was like, that's good. And I don't know what the details were behind this guy's death, but he'll be missed. He'll really be missed. And he was a talent, and all the other people that I mentioned were very talented people and provided joy to the people that saw them perform. And that's a service. And I consider being an artist, being a performing artist, is a form of public service. And it's not always respected. It's only, for the most part, only respected as some of the highest forms in television and film. And when you get to a certain level, you do get that respect. But on these levels that these people are working, it's still high quality material and performances. And there's a lot that goes behind it that a lot of people don't know about. And it takes a lot for the types of people that I know that I've worked with, to get on that stage and, bear all and to, be vessels of, God, where I'm losing my words here. Just being vessels of, creativity and letting the spirit, letting their spirit of these characters, these things that they're doing, pass through them. And, it's pretty sad. And I thought I would be remiss if I didn't say anything about it, on the show. Cause it's really something that, affected me, and it hurt me. It just hurts, man. It's just to see that, to lose people, you know. And everybody's always into their own thing, and it happens, but it's, you kind of get self absorbed into what you're doing in your life. And you realize some of that shit is a little meaningless when it comes to, you know, something like this. So just appreciate the people that are in your life. And let them know that you appreciate them. Doesn't hurt. If you feel that way, I mean, don't manufacture, but if you feel that way, definitely tell those people, man. So moving right along, last Tuesday, this past Tuesday, I did my headlining show at Caroline's, and, man, I had a really great time. It was so much fun. It was like I told you guys before, I was just sort of chomping at the bit to do this show, because it was like, there's a point where you're preparing for it. When I have a big show, like I'm preparing for it, I'm listening to my rap music, and it's and a little bit of St. Vincent and a little Ariana Grande, and just like it was time to do that show. Like, I know, like you've heard me talk about, you know, putting it off, I got asked to do this show, like, full disclosure, I got asked to do this show a couple of times, at least within the last 2 years, they asked me to do the show, and I just didn't feel ready. Like, one, because people say, you know, they say, oh, it's just a glorified bringer show, and it's not, you know, I mean, it's not, but it, if you sell tickets, that's great. But my thing was, I was more concerned about, and I mentioned this on the Andy Klein episode, and I went back and listened to that. And Andy told me, he said, you know, you take the stage as a headliner, and no matter what kind of credits you have, you bring them into you, and they'll, you know, and you'll be all right. So, what was I going to say? Yeah. So I had a really good time, and the people that came, what I really wanted, I didn't care about how many tickets got sold. It would have been nice if the people that said they were going to come on Facebook, if they came, that would have been better. The more, the merrier. But the people that would be like, oh man, my cousin's mother's brother, uncle died, and I can't come, and you know, the people that actually hit me up and said they couldn't come, that was pretty neat, that the people wanted to come but they couldn't. I don't know, it wasn't neat. No, it wasn't. I don't give a shit that they said whatever. I wasn't concerned about that. The people that came, it was, I wanted to give them a show. I wanted to, like, not only did they spend money for a ticket with my name on it, like, they spent their time, and time is often more precious than money. And they spent that time. It was on the day after a holiday. So maybe a lot of people's first day back at work after a while. And those people, I mean, when you do shows like that, it's usually on and off, like an off night. So, but whatever. Those people came, man. Like, people, one of my friends came from Albany. One person who heard me on The Black Guy Who Tips came from Connecticut. And, like, people came, like, you had, like, they came from all over the place to come see me tell jokes. And that meant a lot. That was really humbling. So, with that being said, I had to give him a show. And I felt like I gave it to him. I felt like everybody that came had a good time. It was a lot of fun. And thank you to Caroline's for letting me hang out at your club for a little bit and tell some jokes for about an hour or so. Shout out to Andrew Short, Gordon Baker Bone, and Courtney Farrington for being there. It was awesome, man. It kind of went by. I felt like it went by fast. Like they were up there, they did their thing, they killed it. Boom, 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 and then it was my turn to go up there. And I know, like when I was up, like I had fun. Like I was, and then people were telling me because this was like my first time doing an hour in the city, and people were like, somebody told me, I'm not gonna say who it was, but it's like, yeah, the check spot, man. When you're there, man, fucking check spot. You just, whoa, dude. I mean, I didn't even think about, like, I noticed that they were dropping checks, but it was like at a point where I was in the middle of a story. Like I had gotten the light at like 40. I told them to light me at 40 and then I would start wrapping it up. Cause they had like, it needed to be a 90-minute show. So 7:30, and for us to get out a little after 9, that would be good. Cause you have to be on time. So I ended up doing like 53 minutes. And that was good. I could have did more. Like, I'm not trying to sound like a dude. I could have did fucking more, but I could have. It didn't feel like it was that. It felt like it was fast, even though it wasn't. Like, it was just sort of like they tell you, like they used to tell us in theater school to just like stop time. When you're up there, you want to stop time. You want to be like in the moment, and you want to have people, but it's just like looking, like I noticed when I was like up there, just like doing what I do. I was like, oh, this feels good. This feels like the pacing was good. And then I just noticed that, oh, they're dropping checks, but it wasn't like, I gotta do something to make people interested. I felt like they were interested the whole time. You know, it didn't feel weird or anything. So I just kind of noticed, like, oh, that's the check spot. Because the check spot is the part, like when you're doing a show, when you're a headliner. I'm not saying like I'm a fucking headliner right now, but I'm just saying that's one of the times where people, the audience isn't really, they're like, oh shit, now back to reality. We've been drinking a lot and we've been eating, and now it's time to pay the piper. And you're looking at your check and you're like, well, you had the nachos, I ain't have none of the nachos, I had the chicken tenders and you had the salad, so yours was $12.85 and mine was $19, so you gonna have to, so it's just like all that stuff going on while you're up there trying to entertain. But I didn't notice that at all, and I just went through and I had a great time. And it was something that it was a, for me as somebody that's trying to evolve in this profession, it was a big milestone for me. Like, you know, they had my poster with my fat face on it in front of the club. People were taking pictures in front of the poster. It was really cool, man. It was just like, It was awesome. It was really awesome. And it made like, it was a magical night on a Tuesday night. Like that happened. And then that's New York City for you, I think. Like that's how amazing New York City is. Cause I know that as a fan of music and just going out to different shows and all this thing like that, for all the shit I talk about, like Times Square and New York City, like it's like you can go see a show and be moved. I'm not talking about my, like people were moved by my fucking show, but like I, as a fan, like on a Wednesday night, I could go see like, or what was it like that? Whenever I went to see the Foreign Exchange and just had an amazing time, or see St. Vincent destroy a Terminal 5 in front of 3,000 people on a weeknight. Like, how it's amazing. And that's what you, that's what happens every night somewhere in that city, somewhere like in a major city or anywhere. Like, you can be moved. It doesn't have to be on a Friday or Saturday night. And I think that's why in my older age, if I do something on a weeknight, like if I go to a show on a weeknight or a concert or something, and I have like a great time, I really don't mind not doing anything on Saturday night, on like a Friday or Saturday night. Last night I went into the city. I had to run an errand, and then I went to Sonic, and then I went to Target, and that was my that was my Saturday night. I'm a pretty wild guy. I'm pretty. You can tell I'm a party guy. Yeah. So it was just a great night. Thanks for everybody that came out. Shout out to the homie Phil Provencio, who was off that night. He's one of the managers at Caroline's, and he was off that night. Also a photographer. He was off that night. And came to the club to take pictures of me and the guys. Like, and if you're friends with me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, you probably saw that great picture that he took of me and Courtney and Andrew, sans Gordon Baker Bone, because he had to leave. But the picture would have been even more epic if he was there. Just a really great pick, and he just came. Yeah, I wanted to come up and take a picture. It was nice, man. It was really, really sweet of him to do that. And the amount of people that came to support, like Romaine Walters from DC. Shout out to the homie Romaine for coming through. Lafayette Wright popped his head in at the end of the show. I said, "Yo, did you come?" He was like, "Yeah, I was there," and he laughed at me. But yeah, man, shout out to all those people that came, and it was a really fun night and meant a lot to me at this point in my career. And it ain't over. Daddy's still got work to do. I had fun on the show. I think the set was good, but there's way more work to be done, and I need to get booked again on shows. I'm going to be at Mara's Cafe on September 12th in Fanwood, New Jersey. That's the next show, and then I'm going to be at the Stand on the 24th. So Daddy needs some more dates. And also shout out to everybody that booked me when they knew that I was doing this show, and I said I'm doing a breakout show, and I'm just trying to get up. Please, can you get me? Thank you to all those people that helped out with that and booked me on shows, and it really meant a lot, man. And It was so great. I'm just kind of overwhelmed. I'm still like, I recorded the set on audio, and Dana Glidden, who is the videographer, cameraman / director for a lot of the JL Covan videos. He came in and recorded the show, and shout out to him too. But I just kind of bounced around the audio. I really didn't get to listen to it yet. It's still fresh in my head. It's just like sort of one of those. It's kind of surreal, because that was the first time that I really sort of stepped out and did something on my own, as far as like people coming to pay money, like real money, to see me at a real club. And yeah, it was awesome, and I am forever humbled by that experience. All the people that came, and I felt like that was a magical night, and I will stop talking about it. It was great. Let's get into some other things. Leaked celebrity nudes. There's been a lot of stuff going around with, like, what, the Jennifer Lawrence, the Kate Upton, some other actresses that aren't as famous. And one thing about this was, you know, well, Kate Upton, the thing that was a little, I saw the Jennifer Lawrence pictures, They're all like, she's, I think she's attractive. But a lot of these girls are a little too skinny for me. A lot of these starlets are just a little, they're just too skinny. And it's really not that, you know, I don't know. I just kind of like a lady with a little meat on their bones. Kate Upton, like she kind of was showing her stuff for a minute. There's just like a thin piece of fabric over her titties and most of the shots that she's in. I mean, she's really hot. The most disturbing thing was that there was a picture with jizz on her back, with ejaculate on her back. And that was kind of like, why would you put, and then why are they putting these pictures in the cloud? It's not like, it's just for privacy concerns. If you're going to have your naked pictures, that's fine. You know, like whatever. But why are you, I would not store that stuff in the cloud, because it just doesn't seem right. Who knows what they have on everybody? Who knows? And now we're going to take legal action because some white titties were exposed and they didn't need to be exposed. And they, like, this happens. It's not like this hasn't happened before. I don't know. I just feel like, I don't know. I really, people were acting like this was a national tragedy when all these girls did pose them and then like put them up in the cloud. I wonder how, I don't know how, I don't know, man. And then people on the, people, you're creeps if you looked at them. You're creep. Of course people are going to look at them. There's some comedians that I always butcher what they said. But like somebody said, yeah, man, it's really messed up what these people are doing with, you know, these pictures and everything. Does anybody have a link? Like they couldn't find them. Cause I did look, like there were some on Reddit and as soon as you could look at them, they were wiping them away. They were taking them down. Like you could not see these white titties, without them trying to take them away from you. And just in a place where porn is so, in a time where porn is so ubiquitous, I didn't think I would, cause when stuff happens, your natural curiosity is gonna wanna see it. You're gonna wanna see these, what happened, cause it's the hot thing in the news of the day. And that, in the news cycle, that's the hot thing. Like, when Floyd Mayweather, we found out that he wasn't a great reader, everybody wanted to see what they were talking about. I wanted to see it. I had a different reaction than everybody did about that. But, I mean, you're going to want to see what's going on. And people are innately creepy. You just have to people mask it with a lot of stuff. But don't be so fucking self-righteous that you think you're better than somebody because you didn't look at Jennifer Lawrence's titties this one time, but you did other creepy shit, but you jerked off to like somebody else that wasn't in Hunger Games. You know what I'm saying? Just because you didn't jerk off to somebody that wasn't in a movie, or look at, I wouldn't jerk off to pictures anyway, but just because you didn't like jerk off to those pictures, you're better than me. Fuck you. And I'm not saying that I looked at the pictures. I just saw, who did I see? I saw Jennifer Lawrence. I saw Kate Upton. And then I saw Victoria Justice. And these girls are pretty, like these actresses, like these starlets, they're like what? Like early 20s. Like they're cute and they're pretty. I would not turn any of them down. But these girls are, they're so skinny, man. They're tiny and little, man. They're too small. And I just hate, like, I was hanging out with this one girl when you're hanging out with girls and they don't, and you're just, oh, you're beautiful, you're telling them they're beautiful, and you're just like, what? The insecurity that some women have about themselves when they're just like so beautiful, they're hot, and they're like, women. Oh, let me just stop talking about that. And then, and I think I call, I I'm not going to say I called it. I'm not going to do the Verzi, the dude I called it thing. But I am going to say that I did call the fact that Jill Scott, there was apparently some leaked photos of Jill Scott in lingerie. And then there was supposedly one where she was naked that she claims wasn't hers. Jill Scott, when you talk about sexy, it's Jill Scott. And Jill Scott, like I told you when I told you about baggage claim and get on up, she's had, some people have a renaissance. Some people have a reconnaissance. Jill Scott has had a titty-sance. And it's a beautiful thing. And I've said this for a while now that Jill Scott is just so sexy. There was a song, like there was a recent album. Maybe it came out within the last 5 years where she had this song. It was a very like sexy song. And I can't remember the name of it right now, but I was driving and listening to this song. I almost had to pull over. Now you have certain songs that, oh, you know, like songs right now, music now, like, pop mainstream music is sort of like, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me, suck, suck, suck it, put your dick in my mouth. And like, it's really creepy and it's really like explicit, basically. It's not creepy, but it's just super explicit. You kind of know what they're talking about. And Jill Scott didn't need to do that. She didn't need to be, well, she, I mean, there was imagery that she was conveying in the music, but it was just like, I'm going to have to, like, this isn't like Anaconda where you see the video and you see Nicki Minaj's ass shake. Like, this is just an MP3 of Jill Scott talking, singing. I felt like I was going to have to pull my car over, like pull over on the side of the road and just calm myself down. She doesn't get enough credit, but it seems like now she is. And it's interesting what the way that her path is kind of going now. It's just like, oh, Jill, all right, I'm on board, I guess. You're hot, you're doing your thing. And I really didn't like that song. Was one thing, like, she did have a song, I mean, she had a song called Honey Molasses. Let me see. What album was that from? Molasses. Jill Scott. I think, I don't know if that was a, that's a sexy song too. But, oh, so that's the first album, but that's not the exact song. But she's fucking sexy and she's like 40 years old. I mean, that's not old. I think I've said this before. That's not really old, but it's she's giving these starlets a run for their money. And the first time I realized that, like, I always thought, okay, she's sexy, she's whatever, she's a great singer. She was in this, what is this show? It's like a show that was like an HBO miniseries, and I'm gonna find it. And I know, like, Black bloggers they were saying, oh, white feminists aren't really talking about Jill Scott's leaked photos. Like, who gives a fuck, okay? Jesus Christ. She was on the show, the number one ladies detective agency, where she played this, like, detective, like a private eye. And it was just, like, for one, I guess, one season. And it was based on a series of novels. And yeah, man, she was in this show and like she was very, very voluptuous and just sexy as fuck. So if you can find this, let's see, what is this? This is after her father's death. I'm just gonna read this IMDb. After her father's death, sensible and cheerful, Mama Precious Ramtotswe sells her inherited cattle and opens the country's only female-owned detective agency. She hires Botswana secretarial college graduate Grace Makutsi as her assistant. Together, they solve problems big and small with their wisdom, big hearts, and endless cups of red bush tea. So yeah, it's pretty good. Like it's actually a good series, and I think they only did like one season or something. It's probably like on HBO on demand. I know it's on DVD or whatever, but like she's a full figured woman and she's just sexy. Oh God, she's so sexy in that thing. And then she's got these movies where she's showing it. So, yeah, man, don't leave Jill Scott out of the, don't forget about her, man. Cause she's Titty Sons. All right. The Titty Sons of Jill Scott as discussed on the Mundane Festival. Music, I haven't been listening. I listened to the new Jhené Aiko CD, her new album Sold Out, but it was just sort of like a cursory listen. Like I was in my car. There was somebody in the car. We were driving to work and I really didn't get to listen to the music, but it sounded good, but I really didn't get to take it all in. So eventually I will. And when I do, I'll tell you about it. I just can tell you right now, it sounds good. How about that? But music wise, like I've listened to the Rory and my buddy that put me on the Rory, the Indigo Child album. He's going to be playing at Webster Hall. So maybe if I have some, can scrounge up the funds, I'll try to check him out and, let you know how that was. Cause my buddy texted me last night. It was like, yo, we got to talk about Rory, man. This guy's got an epic sound and he's telling me all this. So when he's excited about an artist, my interest gets piqued a lot more than usual because he knows his shit. What else? Just sort of listening to oldest, like getting ready for the shows. Like I was just kind of listening to old underrated album. I think misunderstood album, Commons Electric Circus circa 2002-2003. A lot of people shitted on that album. They did not like it very much. I think it's a very good album. Not because Common's one of my favorite rappers, but because he did have a couple of gems on it. Now, he was with Erykah Badu when they were talking about how Erykah Badu changes guys and, you know, sort of ruins their creativity or whatever. Yeah, that's when Common was wearing stuff from the thrift shop. But he's got some jams on that album, and don't sleep, man, because he's got some joints. And I had the privilege of getting to see him perform that album live. I don't think I ever talked about this, but he did. When he toured that album, he toured it with a band called A Black Girl Named Becky, and he mentions them on that album. He says, "I travel the world with the black girl named Becky." Something, something. Every time I try to quote rap lyrics, I can't. When I'm not doing a podcast, I can quote them, but when I'm doing them, I'm not really that good at it. When I'm talking about them on a show or something. Travel the world with the black girl named Becky Grand, like Auto Theft 3. Yeah, something like that. So you can tell when an album's kind of old if a rapper is mentioning Grand Theft Auto 3 when like 5 is out. But no, that when he did that at the House of Blues and 2000, like maybe like 2003. And he ripped it. Like those songs that people say, oh, it's not a great song. Speaking of Jill Scott, he has a great song called I Am Music with Jill Scott on there. And it's fucking great. And it was awesome. I remember the night that I saw that show. It was a cold, wintry night in Chicago. I was an intern actor at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater with my grad class. And we were doing that show, and And it was a Saturday night, I believe, and we had done like two shows. And I remember trying to race to get on the bus to get to the House of Blues to go see that show. And of course, rap shows always start late. So I got there on time. Like, I didn't have to worry about getting there on time because the show started late, but Common like fucking tore it down. And I just remember that being like an awesome show. And it was great. Like, I think that album's underrated. I would say give it another chance if you slept on it or you didn't like it. He's got a couple of gems, man. Let me see. Let me go to. Why don't I just, you know, try to pick out the songs that I enjoyed and just see. Let's see how many songs that I liked on that album. Let's see. Electric Circus. All right. Because the critics hated this fucking thing, man. Track listing. All right. So Ferris Wheel was kind of like an intro. And when the girl was like, not even, yeah. Not even, like she was doing that. I like Soul Power. I like Soul Power. We keep going, so you could rock on. We keep going. Yeah. Nigga, breathe. You tell about how you rap. You don't believe. Ain't hungry no more. So off me, you feed. I hustle at the speed of between. See, I'm fucking up. He says, I hustle at the speed between greed and need. How dope is that? Aquarius, I liked. Electric Wire Hustle Flower. It was all right. The Hustle was good. So we got Soul Power, Aquarius, The Hustle, Come Close. How could you not like Come Close? Mary J. Blige on the hook. The Neptunes produced it, you know. New Wave, Star 69, all right. Prince was on the record. Can you hate it if Prince was on there? I got a right to feel high. I like that song. Between Me and You, with CeeLo Green, who's kind of fucking up his career. That was a good song. I Am Music. So he has some joints on there. It wasn't like people acted like this was a horrible album, but it wasn't. But to see him perform a lot of these songs, like, it was great. The Hustle, I even remember doing we had to do this like performance piece and combine all these different works of literature and music and like this one man show element. It was a performance of literature class that I had like in my second year of grad school. And I used a Bertolt Brecht monologue, and I used this Hustle song, and I did like some of this cool shit. Cause he has like, he says something like, my eyes watch God from a place where times is hard. Like those first lines are just fucking dope. Like I combine like Chicago, cause Common is a Chicago rapper. And, like this, it's like the city of big shoulders and all this really cool shit. You'd have to see it. It was one of those, you had to have been there, but I remember that song. He's got some joints. I really think this was an underrated Common album. And of course, when he came back with B, like he did his thing and really he's like, oh, okay, this guy's back. And I think I remember a couple episodes ago, I was talking about, Common when he had that, before Nobody Smiling came back, he had that song with, I think Made in Black America or some song he had with, Ab Soul, where it was just like a dope ass song and he was rapping his ass off because he had like a reason. He kind of had like rapped. He raps when he raps with a chip on his shoulder, he's at his best. But I think my all time favorite Common album is like Water for Chocolate. That was his album. That was his best album. All right. So moving right along, Electric Circus, Common, check it out. Don't hate on it too much. I didn't see any new. I did see some new movies, but not at the theater. I sort of just I um, I watched a lot of specials within the last week, like, and listened to a lot of specials. I listened to the homies, JL Covan, and Keep My Enemies Closer. Just get myself focused for my show. I listened to Randolph Terrence's Blue Magic. I watched Patrice O'Neal, Elephant in the Room. Just watched like a bunch of Bill Burr, watched his stuff. Just sort of to just get focused on like the technique and all that great stuff. I watched Finding Forrester, one of my all-time favorite movies. Like that scene where he has that confrontation with the teacher when he's rattling off those quotes and he like beats the teacher at his a professor at his own game. Fucking great movie moment. I think it's up there with my favorite movie moments of recent memory, up there with Eminem and 8 Mile, the last maybe, 15, 20 minutes of that movie, like the rap battle. Oh, just fucking great. I watched La Bamba. I don't know that I watched that to get inspired or anything, but I had been thinking about that movie for quite some time, and I think somebody mentioned it on Facebook, and I was like, oh, and I saw that it was on Netflix. I was like, holy shit, I'm going to watch this. So I watched La Bamba, and I will say this, and I wrote it on Facebook. I think that movie is one of the best biopics of a musician of all time. It's got to be one of the best. It's one of the greatest, man. Like, just that whole story, Ritchie Valens, and just, God, that was like a year of him rising to the top, a little over a year, and just dying after that. And then just like everybody, I tweeted it, and people had that scene with Isai Morales. Just, he was kind of overacting in that movie. He was just a little, he was on one in that movie. He's like, Ritchie! Oh, man. Yeah, so it was that's a great fucking movie. There's something about, like, that's to me, and I've said it before. I said it on J.L. Covan's podcast. I did an episode with him, a movie episode on his Righteous Prick podcast, so you can check that out. And that came up because we were talking about biopics and music. It's just one of those, to me, like, those can be more powerful than superhero movies, because just as powerful or even more, because it was an actual person. Like, an actual person really did the shit, no matter how dramatized it is. Like, this person came from obscurity or came from humble beginnings and became this amazing performer. It's just something, it's something magical about that. Like, to me, I guess, because I'm trying to do a similar thing, but it's just something that's more, it's more better than like superhero movies to me. I saw the unauthorized Saved by the Bell movie. That was pretty bad, man. It was so disjointed. The casting was not very good. Like, nobody really looked like any of the actors. A lot of people were just kind of, and when I knew I was excited to see it, but I just wasn't, it was not very good. And it just seemed like, I don't know. It was just so disjointed. The Lifetime just kind of just throws stuff out there. And people were saying that it was supposed to be Screech's story about how he felt. And if it was Screech's story, it kind of made him look like an asshole. Like, it really did. Like, he would have some kind of turmoil and then he would go do karate. Like Patrick Swayze. Was it Patrick? No, Kevin Bacon dancing in the warehouse and Footloose, like, that was his moment. It wasn't very good at all. I don't know. It was just all over the place. Just try to make it so salacious, like, that nobody liked each other really, and there was just like a lot of drama going on. But like, I listened to Mark Paul Gosselaar on Pete Holmes's podcast a couple of months ago on You Made It Weird, and he was just talking about, yeah, he just sort of had fond memories overall about that show. And, you know, of course, people, any kind of job you have, you're going to have stuff that doesn't go the way you want it to go. I mean, that's just life. But overall, he seemed to be cool about it. And he seemed to be like, he seemed to have moved on from whatever drama happened. And he seems to be well adjusted. I see Mark Paul Goss, not, I mean, Mario Lopez on TV doing his thing. And they tried to make the movie like, so as you know, Zach Morris would do the timeout thing, but then it was Screech who did it. And it was just kind of like, it was pretty shitty. And then that same week, I found out that they had a Brittany Murphy biopic, and it just sort of came out of nowhere. And I didn't know that they were going to have this. I said, well, I got to see this shit. And that came on last night, and that was horrendous. That movie was so bad that it needed a timeout from Screech from the unauthorized Saved by the Bell movie. The casting was bad. Again, the girl looked nothing like Brittany Murphy. She was attractive, but she was like thick, like in an attractive, thick, sexy white girl way. But she didn't look anything like Brittany Murphy. Then the movie started out where she starts acting and performing and doing commercials when she's 13. The woman playing her was 30. She's like 29, 30 years old. And she's playing a 13-year-old. And it's like, no, you're not fucking 13. And it just made it look like she did Clueless and her life was over. She got a little famous and her life was over. She fucked Ashton Kutcher for a little bit. And like, she didn't have a career. But you look at Brittany Murphy's IMDb page, and she had a career, man. Like, it's unfortunate the way that she died, and nobody, do we really know how she died? It's tragic the way she died. She was only 32, but this woman had a career from, let's see, you're looking at her wiki, looking at her IMDb page. She played Frank's sister in Murphy Brown in 1991 and really didn't stop working until she died. Like, there's a fucking movie that came out on video in 2014. I mean, it just made it seem like her life was really fucked up, that she was paranoid. I don't know the demons that she had or whatever she was going through, but it just tried to trivialize this performer's career, where it's just like she didn't do shit just because she wasn't famous. No, she was famous. I mean, just because she wasn't, maybe she didn't reach the heights that she wanted to reach. But to somebody that wants to be in show business, I mean, she had a good fucking career. Even though some of her shit was like, what? Like, some of her stuff was straight to video, but it just made it seem like the worst fucking thing in the world. Like, it was off, man. And the thing about it was, they showed this after movie thing called Beyond the Headlines, Brittany Murphy. That was actually better than the movie. They really shouldn't have done the movies. They could have just did the Beyond the Headlines thing. And it was more informative than this. But again, they talk about, you know, Clueless was her breakout role. She was the third lead in that movie. Like, going back, I remember, like, Clueless was a great movie. That spawned, that was the reason for some of the shitty high school movies that came out after that. Like, I remember that being one of the first movies of my time, like, high school movies, for it to be like, yo, this is something, this is dope. But then, like, Hollywood, of course, started to try to capitalize and make a lot of these shitty movies, but there's some greats. There are 10 Things I Hate About You to be one of them. And a few others, but I just remember 10 Things to be one of the best out of that genre. But yeah, she was the third lead in this movie. And they're like, but then it made Alicia Silverstone a star, but Brittany Murphy wasn't. But Alicia Silverstone, that was a breakout role for her. She was the lead. And of course she's going to get shine because she was a lead in a really good movie that made a lot of money. And then they went to Girl Interrupted where, let's see, Girl Interrupted, what was her billing in that? I'm clicking on it. That was 1999. Why is my computer being finicky? Oh my God, you know that I want this and you're being really slow. You know that I want this and it's being really slow. I don't know why my laptop's doing this, but let's see. Looking at the IMDb page, it doesn't look like. Okay, so the fourth lead. So you had Winona Ryder, Angelina Jolie, who won the Oscar. You had Clea DuVall, who was the third lead. Brittany Murphy was the fourth lead in that movie, and she was really good in it. She was just a good actress in these big movies. And then they were just like, but Angelina Jolie won the award and Brittany Murphy was left to the side. I don't know what she was feeling back then, but I mean, it just made it look like her career wasn't successful. And it was. I mean, she died before she was only 32. And I know this, the stigma between, you know, being in your 30s and being a woman, a female actress and going through what you're going through as you age and everything like that. But man, like, I mean, she had a career that just made it seem like they just like kind of shitted on her. It was just kind of weird. It was a fucking, and then at the end of the movie, like they say, like, Brittany Murphy fucking died. And then she died. And then there was a picture of her. There was a little clip, like a scene of the girl who's actually playing Brittany Murphy. It was her taking a picture and she was laughing. It was like, ha ha ha. And it just looked fucking creepy. It was creepy as fuck. And then blackout. Like that was, I don't know. That shit was in poor taste. I mean, Saved by the Bell was like shitty. But this one was kind of like trashy. This is just sort of like a really trashy movie that I was not a fan of, guys. I did not like it. So that's going to be the end of the podcast today. Thanks for listening. Next week, I'm at, like I said, I'm going to be at Mars Cafe in Fanwood, New Jersey, and that's going to be fun. I'm going to be closing that show out. And it's going to be a good time. If you're in that general area, I believe that's in Union, New Jersey. If you're around, come see that. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be some fun comics on there. Be good to yourselves. Hug your friends and family. Tell them you love them. Give them their flowers while they can still see them and smell them. And be good to each other. Take it easy. I'll see you next time.